This is 98.1 FM, Raglan Community Radio, Irirangi o Whaingaroa. Hello, kia ora, my name is Jason. I teach holistic health and healing, and welcome to Your Health, Your Choice, a show that guides you on your healing journey, helping you choose your own healing path. And today, to help us on that path, I have Cara Leah. Cara Leah, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Super stoked to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. I mean, you've done a lot of work in the spirituality field and helping people with their health and in yoga and all this stuff, which I've just come across recently, your work. That was at Resolution Festival. And yeah, I really am excited to learn more about you and your story. And how did you get into this? What was it that made you go into this side of things? Because for me, it was my depression, it was my gut issues that got me looking down this path. What was it for you?
Initially, it was back issues. I had a spinal fusion, L4 and 5, when I was 16. And by the time I was like 21, I had sciatic pain down the other leg. And the doctors are like, you're probably going to need another operation type thing. And I was like, yeah, nah. The first operation obviously didn't solve what was the underlying root cause. So I decided that I was going to sort my back out myself. And I just had this intuition. I'd done a little bit of yoga. And I was like, I think yoga is really, really going to help. So that was what initially got me on the path, was back issues. Yeah.
And you've got a book titled Sex, Drugs, and Mostly Yoga, Field Notes from a Kundalini Awakening. And you also mentioned about bipolar and psych ward visit. Is this all part of it? Is this?
Yeah. So the back issue stuff happened when I was like 16, 21. It was 25. Mm-hmm. I was 25 when I decided, right, I'm gonna heal my back using yoga. And then so I did a lot of yoga, and I was still doing quite a lot of recreational drugs, and you know, mushrooms and LSD and cannabis and ecstasy and cocaine and alcohol, all the things. And so then when I was 29, so about 4 years later, I was in a very challenging, I mean, amazing relationship with a man I loved deeply. We were engaged, but it was bringing up all of my unresolved issues, of which I turned out I had quite a lot. And that combination of yoga, meditation, plus the recreational drug use, plus the emotional pressure and the patterns, et cetera, of the relationship was like this perfect storm that ended up, I was at a festival, my first ever festival called Shambhala in Nelson, BC in 2004. And I went into like this full on Kundalini awakening where I just was so connected to everything and I knew everything, including the fact that my fiance and my best friend were going to end up in a relationship. I could sense it because they were both at the festival. And I'm like, what the? But it was like the timelines collapsed. And so everything became known simultaneously.
Everything happening at the same time.
It felt like everything was happening at the same time. And I started, you know, I couldn't discern what was here and now and what was like in the future as such. Anyway, it went all the way to about 3 or 4 days after we got home from the festival. I never really came down from the festival. I just was having these full-on expansive mystical experiences and feeling Christ consciousness. And then I started going into spontaneous Kriya and speaking what might have been ancient Egyptian. And it was at that point that my fiance and a friend or two were like, we need to take her to the psych ward. Something is not right. Because I couldn't communicate. Like I'd gone into freeze internally. I was so scared, but the stuff was happening spontaneously. So there was a dual experience of internal freeze, but the spontaneous arising of movement and words and language. Yeah. Anyway, so I ended up in the psych ward. I get assessed by a psychologist I think it was actually a psychiatrist, and he was kind of onto it. He was like, oh, spiritual burglary. He's like, you open the doors of perception too wide and it's just blowing your circuits. But they also assessed me, and based on the presenting symptoms and, you know, I gave a family history, et cetera, they decided that I was bipolar, that I was having a manic episode that had gone all the way into psychosis. I knew I'm like, this isn't mental illness. This is something else, you know, but I kept my mouth shut, because I didn't want them to think I was crazy.
Well, it's interesting. A lot of shamans would be diagnosed as bipolar.
that's exactly it. Like I had that understanding. And then my fiance broke up with me about 3.5 weeks later, which the grief, it triggered a second episode of psychosis. I ended up in the psych ward again. Again, yeah, that was there. They're like, oh, you should be on medication, blah, blah, blah. So they gave me the medication and they sent me on my way with a diagnosis. And meanwhile, I'm going, something else is going on and I'm going to figure it out myself. And that something else was, yeah, a Kundalini awakening and very much opening into multi-dimensional perception, being able to perceive simultaneously through time and through the different realms, but not being grounded enough and being able to navigate that space and communicate it in a kind of a logical, grounded way to the outside world.
Is that where you are now?
Yeah, definitely. Way, yeah, way more grounded. I mean, that was 2004. It's almost 20 years now. And so now what I notice is I absolutely still can feel through the timelines and access those other realms, and it's become my body of work. But it doesn't confuse me anymore, and I'm able to communicate with people. I'm able to really notice and name, acknowledge whatever is being perceived, and I don't mistake X for Y, if that makes sense. You know, I don't m misread things. So
So it's
it's
like
been
you have
one.
access to the me cosmic memory or like something that you can tap into.
Yeah, it's the recognition that. It's like the dissolution of the apparent separate sense of self, right? Is that ultimately, I'm just trying to think how to phrase this so it makes sense. Ultimately, we do have access to everything. And it's like the doors of perception are closed though. So things are closed off to us. And once those doors start to open, then by choice or at will, you can kind of feel into things and feel what that would be like or what that's like or you know, and it's all just there. It's all just there at any given time.
These doors that do they open? I'm guessing they open to a lot of places that are peaceful, loving, and joyful. But what about places that are dark? Is that what's happening unconsciously for people? Doors are opening and they're seeing things and it's scaring them.
Yeah. Terror and fear are a big aspect of what goes on. Because when this first started to happen back in 2004, I was terrified. I didn't know what was going on. It was scary, so scary. And then when I'm perceiving things like my fiance and best friend ending up in a relationship together, that emotion, I didn't know if it was true, but I felt as if it was going to be true. And then emotionally, that was really hard to deal with. And they did, you know, and they did end up in like going out for about 6 months. So the terror and the fear is something that we need to be able to be with and move through. And I think that's the biggest difference for me now is I'm no longer scared. I'm no longer terrified of whatever I might encounter. Right. Like, and I, you know, we all have darkness. We all have the ability to murder someone, you know, like any one of us, given the right circumstances and the right conditioning and the right whatever, could do horrific, horrible things. Like, ultimately, we're not different from Hitler, you know, it's just the circumstances and the conditioning is different, you see. And so to be able to really confront and face these aspects of human behavior and to meet it fully without being terrified of it, that's a real skill as well. That I've found that through the body of work I've done, including my own shadow work and you know, coming to terms with the ways in which I've mistreated people or acted in non-beneficial ways, and looking at people who had abused me and like being able to be okay, like almost like be okay with that and go, oh, I get it. I get why you took those horrific actions. And I'm at peace with who you are and what you did because that was just your conditioning playing out. That was just your pain playing out. And it doesn't terrify me anymore.
Yeah, it's like being upset at the weather. The weather's going to do what the weather's going to do, and
Yeah.
it's the nature. It's the nature of the weather. It's the nature of this person. It's your nature.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just thinking maybe, a lot of my depression was due to the denial that I was taught, the goal is to be happy, the goal is to be joyful, but I'm not, so something's wrong. But
Yeah.
really, there is the darkness in us. There's shadow. There's suffering in the world, and it's all part of the story. And it was
Yeah.
me denying that, or maybe I just wasn't taught it. I don't know, but I've learned that now, and I've accepted that now. I've ex and I'm so much in a better place because I've accepted all that darkness. Like I wouldn't
Yeah.
change my past at all, nothing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be here today,
Yeah.
as I
And how
am.
awesome is that, right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
That's
I
great.
definitely had a depression that came through a lot. And for me, what I would notice is when depression would arise. In my case, it was often because I was literally depressing emotion that I didn't want to feel or felt like it shouldn't be there, et cetera. And once I began to clock that, it was all happening unconsciously. Then anytime I started to feel depressed, the first thing I would ask myself is, what am I scared to feel right now? Or what needs to be felt right now? And when I would do that, it's like I would start to access the feelings that were under the depression. And when I fully felt whatever was there, then the depression would lift and dissipate. Because what you just said there in terms of we're meant to be happy, and if we're not, there's something wrong, and there's something wrong with us. It's so not useful the way that that is drummed, because it is, it's drummed into all of us. The way that I see it is there is such peace in being at peace with feeling all the things. You know, when grief is there, feel the out of grief. When sadness is there, just really feel all of that. When rage is there, learn how to feel it without acting it out or venting it, you see, to just meet, like you say, the weather, meet whatever arises completely, fully, 100%.
I mean, I had a thought there, now it's gone. And you're talking about fear, and have you seen the latest Puss in Boots movie, The Last Wish?
No, I haven't. I
Well,
haven't.
let's just say it talks about death and the fear of death. And I'm just wondering, for you, and what you've seen and what you've tapped into, what is death for you? Do you have a fear of death?
I sometimes do like death meditation where I imagine dying fully, and sometimes go imagine going into funeral and all of that and just see what it brings up for me. And then whatever it brings up, work with digesting that. And I like to think I'm not afraid of death at all. I don't feel like I'm consciously afraid of it, but at the same time, I'm in an animal body, and the biological imperative of the body is to avoid death, right? So whilst I'm sure that if something happened where my life was in danger, it's going to really probably completely tweak my nervous system. Like I'll go into fight, flight, or freeze, right? So there'll be that biological shift that will happen. And so then, does that mean that then fear starts to arise because the biological system has been triggered? Or does it mean that I'm able to stay orientated to awareness, even though the nervous system is freaking out, and actually be in a calmness and a peace? So I don't,
I'm smiling because they actually show that in the movie. I mean, I know it's an animated movie, but I highly recommend everyone to watch it, because the people who wrote that, like the writing, that must have been high or something. They really tapped into some deep truths in that movie, and they showed that physical fear, and then it's exactly what you're explaining. There's the biological response, but then you can consciously choose, right, how you wish to react or
Yeah,
respond.
that's it. Like if there's awareness of the biological response rather than being identified and possessed by the biological response, then you're at choice as such. And that's really what yoga and meditation is all about. It's mastery of the self, mastering ultimately the nervous system, the reptilian brain, but also the limbic brain, the emotional, and then the mental, the neocortex. So, and through practice, there's these layers that we go on of disidentifying from each layer, right? Disidentifying from the thoughts, disidentifying from the feelings, and eventually disidentifying from the body and the nervous system and the reptilian animal instinct. And what I've noticed in practice is that that's definitely where there is the kind of the densest, darkest, deepest fears, that is because it's so instinctual. It's in our cells, How do you escape identification with the human body, right?
It's in our ancestral memory.
Yeah,
I
totally.
imagine.
That's a whole nother piece, is the way that we're wired biologically because of how we used to live, not that long ago, really, on the grand scale of things.
So on your website, you've got you state that you're dedicated to the alleviation of mind-created suffering. So, are there types of suffering created from the
Well,
mind and some aren't? Is that along the lines of pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional? Is that what you're talking about?
I mean, there is always going to be pain in being a human. That you love someone, you will experience grief. That's just the nature of it. And if your physical body, we will always get sick, We will always experience injury and we will always die. And there is pain in that. Now, is there suffering in that? Well, that's generated by the mind. It's the way we relate to what is happening. You know, and that's like, just think of it, give you a concrete example. When something happens that could potentially cause suffering, if I'm able to drop back into awareness and curiosity, like let's just say, for example, in 2010, I was going over to do my yoga teacher training in LA, and I show up to the airport and I've got the wrong visa and they won't let me on the plane, right? And now that's a moment where I could go into stress and freak out and, oh my God, and rah-de-rah and blah, blah, blah. Instead, I just remember going, wow, that's really interesting. I wonder what's going to happen now. What do I need to do? What's the action I need to take? And, you know, then it's like you have to fly to Auckland, as in Dunedin, you have to fly to Auckland, you have to go to the embassy, you know, okay, cool, I'm going to do this. And there's a sense of like not going into the suffering of the experience, but rather opening into the curiosity and the recognition that, yeah, my plans have been thwarted as such. What I was attached to is not happening. But who knows what might come in this moment. And it was this very interesting 2 or 3 days before I was able to get the visa, get on the plane and get to the teacher training a day late, that actually held so much medicine and so much healing for me. But if I'd gone into stress and mind created suffering and been in that, got to get on the plane no matter what frame, I would have missed all of the beauty that unfolded by surrendering to and opening to the unknown and the uncertainty of it.
I think this, along the same lines with stress.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about physical injuries and physical trauma and physical stress. I'm talking about mental, emotional, psychological. Yeah. I do believe it's self-inflicted.
Always.
Yeah.
Always. Because what is stress? Why are we stressed? Because we're trying to get somewhere or do something the way that we want to do it or have it, you know? And as soon as we let go of all of those ideas and those attachments and we are just with what's happening, there is no stress. There is no stress. There is only what is happening. Can you just be with that foot? But I need, you know, I'm running late. But you're trying to control things. I mean, that's it. Stress only arises out of attempting to control the external.
Right. It's like an expectation that isn't met and then we get upset.
Uh-huh. Totally. We get angry at the world for being how it is.
Yeah. Instead of accepting, okay, this is how it is. Exactly as you say. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's hard because stress has, you know, there's many components. There's the mental, emotional layer, but there's also the biological layer, right?
Mm.
And so being able to unpick that and being able to work with the physiological aspects of the human through breath work, for example, or through meditation, but then also being able to work with the mental, emotional layers and recognize where there's attachment to things or aversion to things or patterns playing out that are generating the stress, you know?
I think you just read my mind. So I was going to give the example of my gut issues growing up, and I would make a big deal out of it. It was painful, but maybe I made it bigger than it was, and maybe that was to get attention. And I didn't know what to do with it. I would go to the doctor. These days, if that ever happens, I have tools such as breath work, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't have to freak out. I don't have to tell the whole world I'm in pain. I quietly, you know, in my own being, breathe through that pain that's coming up, and it's no longer an unknown. It's like, what's going on? How do I deal with this? I've got this. I've been here before. I have the tools now, and I can deal with this pain. So there's no stress. There's no suffering.
Yeah,
it's all you know. But that's only come through education. You know, looking really hard outside of the mainstream paradigm on how to deal with physical, emotional, mental issues that, you know, we all go through.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. That's a really good example of how it used to cause you stress. And now it's something that happens that you attend to, but there's no stress in it. It's just what's happening. May not be your preference, but.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Now, so in your resolution workshop, I was kind of doing a tasting. I was going around doing different workshops at the same time. But there was a thing that it was about awakening myths, keeping people stuck. And you mentioned awakening and enlightenment, and straight away in my mind I was thinking, what's the difference? What's the difference between awakening and enlightenment? Now I'll share with you what I think it is, and see what you come up with. So I say awakening is a realization of the truth, And enlightenment is living that truth every day. Does that make sense?
So I don't see any difference. It's just a different word. The reason I use the word awakening is because the word enlightenment, when people think about enlightenment, they put it up on a pedestal. Like enlightenment is something that happens to Jesus, to Buddha,
Yeah.
to the Dalai Lama. It's not for me because there's no way that would ever happen to me.
It's unattainable, yeah.
Unattainable. Yeah. So I don't use that word. I use the word
Okay.
awakening. And also because enlightenment, it's points to a point in time, whereas awakening is a process that happens over a period of time. So it's living in a process rather than attaining something, you see. So that's again why I use the word awakening. And I use it within the context of the tantric lineages. And the definition I learned from Crystal Wallis is that awakening is a shift in identification. It's the shift in identification that happens when between identifying with the apparent separate sense of self, the story of me, like I am Karalia and I'm this person and blah, 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 blah. And then the shift is when we begin to realize our nature as simply awareness or essence nature or Shiva nature, depending on, it's all the same thing. And then when that shift in identification begins to happen, because it takes, it'll ping pong back and forth and back and forth. When it begins to happen, that's the beginning of the awakening process of beginning to know yourself as simply awareness, right? All the other things that we think we are our thoughts, we think we are the feelings, we think we are the body, but all of those things are temporary and constantly changing. How can that be what we are? Because if you examine, if you go in and sense into what you are, there's an essence there that's always been there your whole life. And that essence, the unchanging into eternal infinite aspect, that is what you are. That's awareness. So awakening is a shift in identification from thinking you're the person to knowing that what you are is awareness or essence nature.
Yeah, so I did a Qigong practice for almost 1300 days in a row, and I can put it down to that practice, my ability to create space and not react, but consciously choose to respond. So it sounds like through that process, I had an awakening, or I was awakening because I shifted.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Congratulations, by the way, for
Yeah.
doing 1300 days in a row. That's epic. And you
Almost
know,
got there. Yeah.
that's amazing. That's so, and you're right. Like if any commitment to any practice that length of time will literally shift your perception of self and reality. Right. And that's the thing with this journey of awakening. It's not an intellectual process. It's not about learning shit, right? It's about a shift in perception of reality. And that comes through practice and applying the teachings to daily life every single day. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. It's good to know. But yeah, in regards to enlightenment, there's a saying, chop wood, carry water, reach enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. So yeah, I do believe people put a lot of stock in words and including God and love. Like, it's like, what do you mean by that? So that's a question for you. How do you define love? Love can mean many things to many people. So when you say I love you, when someone says they love you, what are you sensing? What are you feeling? What are you expressing? What are you receiving?
So when you ask the question, what I do is I just drop into to love, right? And I just go, okay, well, yeah, what is love
What are you
and
dropping into?
into love? Just like, oh, there it
What is
is. It's
that?
just
What is
like
that?
it's like this interconnected field of like I can sense the trees, I can see the mountains and the clouds, and I just feel this overwhelming like I don't want to use the word love, but this was, it's like, this is just like, wow,
Connection.
love for any and all things. There's definitely absolutely connection because there's no separation, right? It's like the mountains in what I am, the trees in what it's like. It's
So
the very like,
non-locality has.
totally. It's absolutely non-local. It's the very fabric that makes up reality itself. So it's like dropping into that and feeling that. And, when we talk about romantic love, that's a whole different ball game. That's often just trauma bonding with a whole lot of chemicals going
Well,
on. So
I don't believe love is an emotion. I believe love is what you say. It's this force. It's this, yeah, I love that word, the fabric of reality.
It is. It's love is the fabric of reality. And usually we think we have to find it by finding an object of affection, like another person, and then we fall in love as if they're the source of the love. But really, all that's happening is they're triggering a mechanism within us whereby we open up and allow them to enter into our beingness, right? So that mechanism doesn't require the person. You can actually learn how to just do that regardless of whether you're in a romantic relationship or not, to literally just let yourself fall in love with life, you know? And then it just radiates. It's like that, the fabric of reality radiating through the being.
Yeah, I've become Buddhist in certain areas of my life, such as I find it difficult to harm creatures and like, but in terms of like pesky mosquitoes, I'll give them 3 strikes, right? I'll give them like one, okay, two, all right, third time, buddy, get out of here. But and that comes down because I do have this openness and loving for other things, rocks, trees, mountains. You know, I do feel like very open to that idea of how you describe love as everything connected and as this one fabric that we're all in.
And we can just radiate it, you know, just be that love because it's palpable and people will feel it when you're interacting with them, you know. And like you say, like that's something I noticed, like when I was having the awakening in 2004, I was a few months prior, I was in Costa Rica and was in a lot of swimming pools, and there'd be so many bugs drowning in the swimming pool. And I was almost like obsessed with, I'd get into the swimming pool and I'd have to go around and rescue all of the flying bugs and put them on the side of the pool so I could enjoy the pool because I could just sense their suffering as they were drowning. And I was like, I have to rescue you all.
That's good. That's good. Another word that people have different ideas around is spirituality or being spiritual. And so what does that mean to you?
I think for me, spirituality is sensing or feeling again the nature of spirit and the way that spirit is in all things and connects all things. You know, mountain has spirit, trees have spirit, you know, the concrete even has spirit, you know, the computer has, it's just like, again, it's somewhat different from love, but the animating force of spirit is in everywhere. So sensing that and understanding how that means that we are in this interconnected reality where it's not mechanistic, it's not like A then B then C, it's so much more interwoven than that. Spirit
It's
is
like a
that which,
dance, is it?
it's so like a dance, it's absolutely like a dance. And spirit is again the fabric of it in a different way that love is, you know.
It sounds like what I'm getting from you is love is the fabric, the base that makes that everything is, and then spirit is what emerges from love. Like spirit is that emerging, or and vice versa, right? Spirit could be that fabric, and love emerges from spirit. Like you said, it's a dance. There'll be people that are quite, loving and all this, and there'll be people that are quite spiritual and connected. Like, you get people in these states of not being part of the matrix and doing their own thing, and they might go off to a cave and meditate for 40 years. That I don't know if that's loving, but it's very, for them, that's quite spiritual. They're emerging into this, into their own way of being in the world. And then there's other people which would be more loving and not act so spiritual. So to me, I'm trying to create a differentiation there.
I mean, I'm with spirituality, like everything is contained within that. There is nothing that is not spiritual as such. Someone's like, oh, it's not spiritual to eat a Big Mac. It's like, that's not true in the slightest. If I ate a Big Mac, I would be so with that experience, completely immersed in and connected with the experience of tasting and feeling the Big Mac. It's not, nothing can be unspiritual. Like either everything is spiritual or nothing is spiritual. So the, you know, when people talk about the so-called matrix, I find that sometimes is not useful because it creates this idea of separation, of we're rejecting this thing in favor of that thing. I'm like, it's all the same. And I love it when people are fully immersed in what they might call the matrix. And they're bringing their practices and their beingness and they're radiating into that because then that's going to shift and change that. Nobody, you know,
Yeah. I was falling back into my left brain mainstream, trying to describe something as this over here, but really it is all one thing. It is all one thing. But in saying that, it's like love, right? Like to me, love is that connection, and it's that bridge that any frequency travels. So including hate, including jealousy, including joy, including peace. So a lot of people get, you know, abused in love. A lot of people die for love. There are wars that are fought for love. So I don't see it
I
as
don't know
this
if
sort
that's
of.
actually love, though. I don't think love can abuse. I don't think
Well,
that is love.
that's what I mean. I'm not saying love is the abuse is love. I'm saying love is that carries the abuse across. They're using love, so it's a mis not a misuse. It's using love for different energies and frequencies. Like for me, it's that bridge, and then you get to choose and decide what goes over that. So that's why, you know, like so you get these relationships. Oh, I'm in a loving relationship, and they're in a domestic abuse situation. On the outside, that's not loving at all, right? From our side, but from their side, this is the most loving relationship I've been in, and they're being abused. So for them, love is abuse. If they're not being abused, it's not love. So I'm trying to incorporate, like, you know, this is what we're saying, but then they're saying this. So are we right? Are they wrong?
Well, there's definitely, like, when I work with people and mentoring, et cetera, what I notice is that sometimes love will be hardwired to other things, like love is fear, for example, or love is abuse, or and this is conditioning that happens early in childhood because there is the family love and then there's the other things happening. So they get associated together. So then someone comes out of childhood with this association that, like you say, abuse means love. And so then they begin to recreate those patterns because that's the only way that they know love is with abuse or whatever it might be. So part of what I do with people is like unhooking that association and opening them up to a felt sense of love without abuse, for example.
Right. And for a lot of people, they find that that's impossible. How could there be love without abuse? Or how can there be love without food? Or how can there be love without gambling? Or, you know, I guess I'm talking about addiction here. What do you,
We can talk
how
about
would you,
addiction.
yeah, I mean, for addiction, I don't believe there's a substance or a thing that makes people addictive. I believe it's everyone's got a path to addiction. It's just everyone's got a different. Like for me, if I had an addiction, it would be food. For others, it's gambling. For others, it's sex. For others, it's this, it's that. I don't believe there's a substance that's addictive, but we have addictive behavior, and I believe it's we're trying to feed something that's vacant or missing or empty within us. Does that make sense?
Yeah, or trying to stuff down pain quite often as well. Like the addiction is a way to avoid the pain. It's a way to alleviate suffering quite often, but it's a misinformed or an ignorant way to do it because it ultimately leads to more suffering. But it serves a purpose. Within the tantric traditions, they talk about addiction. All addiction ultimately is expressing the longing to merge back with God, you see. And so that any addiction can be skillfully worked with so that the addiction will naturally fall away and the genuine longing for awakening or for God or however you define it is revealed. Because you think about that, I've never tried heroin, but if you think about heroin as an addiction, you know, people are experiencing pain and then they inject and all of a sudden it's just like the warmth and the oneness and the melting, and it's just like such relief of like, oh, phew, I'm there. And the longing to be there, like that place they're going to is what it feels like when there's awakening, when there's liberation, you see? So it's like, yeah, all addiction is ultimately seen as a longing, the human longing to know oneself as God.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's making me think of our senses. Like, I guess all addictions are about a physical sense that we're trying to fulfill, but it's not the physical sense that will feed us that longing for God. It's more of a psychological one, an emotional one, a spiritual one. It'll be
And people
interesting.
don't have the tools or the teachings or the practices to find their way there in other ways until they do. You know, like once I really started going into yoga and meditation, because I'd done a lot of ecstasy, et cetera, started going into yoga and doing heart opening practices, and all of a sudden I'm feeling the same way at the end of a yoga class that I used to feel after dropping, you know, a tab of like a pill of ecstasy. And I was like, oh, it's not in the drug. It's in me, and the drug just opened the doorway to it. But now I can open the doorway to it with yoga. Oh, It's probably a
Okay,
bit
I'm
better on
glad
the
that you're.
system.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I've never done any of those drugs. I've done cannabis, I've done rapé, mushrooms, but I've never sort of gone to those heights. Yeah, I feel with all my own personal practice, studying, reading, listening, meditation, eating right, living right, sleeping right, relating right to others, I've reached, I've seen, I've connected, right? I've had those similar experiences, but just by doing things outside the drug route, like I feel like I've done it that way.
Yeah, totally.
And I'm also thinking, what would happen if I were to take drugs? Do I need to take drugs? But like you said, there are ways to open different doors, different doors of perceptions within us. But
Yeah,
I'm
and
glad you
then
said that because I feel like I've gone that path, but without drugs. Yeah.
yeah, because that's like you don't need the drug to open the doorway. But when I first experienced life on E, it was like a watershed for me. It's like, oh my God, I felt so connected to people. I could actually talk to people in a way I'd never been able to do before. And I was like, whoa, this is amazing. And then when I found the same thing through yoga, I was like, oh my God, I don't need to take drugs to have this experience. I can just actually, and now it's pretty much my lived experience most of the time. You know, especially if I'm on a dance floor, I feel like I'm taking things. People come up to me, they're like, oh my God, what are you on? I'm like, I'm not on anything. This is just natural.
Yeah, I'm pretty fortunate. I get that similar feeling when I'm in awesome conversation, when I'm having an awesome meal, or if I'm sharing that awesome meal, having an awesome conversation. I'm just there. I'm in that bliss. I'm there.
But you know, sometimes there's too much conditioning and too much suffering and too much stuff in the way, and so we can't access that, you know. And that's when, yeah, doing the practices like you talked about, like doing 1300 days of a practice, that would have melted quite a lot of that stuff and given you much easier access to that natural experience.
Cool. Yeah. I'm glad I brought that up because now you're making me think I need to get back into Now you've got a direct realization training online course coming up.
I do.
What is that? Direct realization. Are we talking about the same thing here?
Direct realization is basically using your own senses, your own faculties of perception to directly realize the truth,
Okay.
right? So a lot of the practices revolve around like orientation to awareness. Be aware of your thoughts. Be aware of what you're feeling. Be aware of your body. What do you notice? So you're directly realizing what's actually happening. Because a lot of the time we're in our heads and we are not actually perceiving all of the different elements of our body that are happening at any one moment in time. So the practices that we do, the teachings that I give, and the way that I work with people on the training is about being able to, directly realize the truth of your own being and being able to skillfully work with trauma if and when it arises, with your mental emotional state, with anything that's unresolved or undigested. I give a lot of tools for people so that they can learn how to feel what's really challenging and painful to feel.
And I don't know, I guess for me it's denial, right? It's a lot of my suffering I can speak to is that I was in denial. I was denying something. I was denying that it was happening. If it happened, I was denying my part in it and blaming someone else and waiting for them to fix it. And I guess the solution is acceptance. Is that what you talk a lot about?
Definitely, like the more that we take responsibility for our experience, the more we are like, when you take responsibility, the more that you become powerful. Because like, well, I'm responsible for this, then you can respond, you know. So if I'm feeling a particular way and I'm blaming that person for making me feel like that, then how can I do anything with it? Because it's that person's fault that I'm feeling that way. So they have to change so I don't feel like this, because they're. But if it's like, oh, this feeling is in me and it's mine and I'm going to do the work around it and dissolve whatever it is so that that person no longer triggers me, then all of a sudden I've taken responsibility, I'm in my power, I'm using tools and practices, and I can clean up my shit so that I'm less disturbed by all of the things happening externally to me.
Do you think we can completely dissolve those energies within us, although do we integrate or make them part of us? Yeah, how does that?
So the teachings on this is that we will never be 100% liberated of all limitations, because full liberation is ultimately you wouldn't be in the human body because you'd be liberated from the human body. So there will always be patterns to a degree that will run, but there's just more and more available to us. There's more and more choice of experience available to us. Like, for example, someone
Yes.
cuts you off in traffic. If your habitual response is to go into a raid, road rage and freak out and blah, 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 and jump out of the car and beat the guy up, and that lands you in prison, and, like that's a particular scenario. But if you do the work and you get to a point where someone cuts you off in traffic and it brings up all the emotions, but you're able to contain it and begin to digest it, now you've got more choice. You've got the choice of containing or jumping out of the car and beating the guy up. And then eventually you get cut off in traffic and the feelings don't even come up anymore. And you just let you slow down. No, of course, go for it. I don't mind, whatever. Now
Yeah.
you've got even more choices available to you. So there's less, way less reactivity. But there
It's funny
isn't a
that you
point.
choose that example because that's kind of what my issue was. I'd be an angry driver, and now I'm able to, if that does come up, I'll laugh at myself. Oh, look at you go again, getting angry for nothing. So I guess the energy's there, and maybe I haven't dissolved it, but I've transmuted it into something else, like laughing.
And so the energy will still rise up, but you're not
Yeah.
possessed by it. Before you were
No.
possessed by it, now you're not.
Yeah.
And there will be a point along the way where the energy itself might not even arise.
Yeah, so most of the time it doesn't anymore, but when it does, like if I'm late, if I'm late, that's definitely the time it's going to rise up, but I still just laugh at myself.
And so notice that, right? So the circumstance where it comes up is when you're late. So there's an attachment, or you're trying to get there early, right? And so that attachment to things being a particular way is still generating the anger, you
Yeah.
see?
Interesting. Yeah, very cool. Okay, so that's cool. Awareness. So we've spoken a lot about that. So is the question, a lot of people ask, who am I? But is a better question, what am I? Or what, how am I? What is the question? Is there a question?
I find that I do tend to use what am I as well,
What am
because
I? Okay.
there isn't really a who, there's a what.
No.
What am I, and to just sit and see what arises and see what comes through and to feel that. Another question I do find useful is where am I? Because often we are in the past or in the future, or out disassociated outside of the physical body as such. There's lots of
Yeah.
places we can be. And as soon as I ask, where am I? And I tune in and I listen, what that seems to do is bring me back into the seat of the self. Like it brings me back into center just by asking the question. So the question itself,
Yeah.
it's not like I'm looking for an answer, but by asking and listening, there's a shift that happens, you see. So where am I is useful. And I love what am I, to just really sit with that and feel, because the answer doesn't come in words. It's a felt sense.
Yeah, sense. And you've studied Tantra, and that's all about the senses, right? It's all about feeling into those senses.
It's recognizing that ultimately we are sensorial beings, like, so we have the five senses, obviously, and then over time, with enough practice, the mind itself becomes a sensing organ. And that's where there's a lot of shift in perception, because it's like things are being sensed, but the information, the data, it's not coming through the nose or through the ears, or it's literally coming from, or it's like the mind that you are dissolves into the greater mind of all. And so when there's the sensing, all data is available. Back to that point where everything is available, right? So to sense in and feel, it's like, oh, sensing with the mind beyond the five senses, right? So there is, working with the five senses in terms of withdrawal of the senses. So going right into the system so that you can't, it might be really loud music playing, but you're not aware of it anymore because you've withdrawn the senses so strongly. And then there's the opposite, which is to really listen to all the things and tune in to all the sound and just literally immerse in or merge with sound itself, right? And so there's that continuum of being able to deeply sense and being able to withdraw from senses. And so therefore you become a master of the sensory realm, and you're no longer no longer enslaved to the senses. Like enslavement would be like eating chocolate Tim Tams and loving the taste of it so much that even though you're full and you've had enough, you want the sensory taste, so you keep eating them, and it makes you feel sick. And now you're suffering because you ate too many because you were attached to the sensory experience of the Tim Tam in your mouth.
Right. Versus the sensory experience of the stomach, which is probably full.
Yeah. Being able to like really feel the whole body and being able to ask, you know, what's needed and how do I serve the whole body and not just the sense of taste, but yeah, the sense of the belly and what does the belly need right now?
It's interesting because I think I'm there where I feel like I'm feeling my feet standing this whole time. It's not like it's not there. I'm feeling that there, and I'm feeling my shoulders and the t-shirt. I feel like I'm feeling all of that. But before, I, you know, it's like one track mind. I could only focus on one thing at a time, which is why I was neglecting a lot of issues going on in my body and my mind. But yeah, and that comes down to practice, comes down to lifestyle choices.
It's like you've got an experience starting at the totality of life, you know? So you're talking and you're listening and you're feeling and all of that is happening simultaneously and you're aware of all of it, which is, like you say, different to when a lot of people are just in their head thinking and they're not even aware of where they're putting their feet or what the body is doing, et cetera. And that's the journey to literally come fully into awareness of all the things. All the things, which is scary and painful because all the things means feeling the depression and the anxiety and the grief and the rage and all the stuff. You've got to be willing to feel it. But once you feel it fully, we talk about devouring, digesting, and dissolving. So you devour the feeling, you know, you just like really feel it and then it digests, it eases, and then it dissolves and it's done. And then you've actually nourished your system by fully feeling the emotion. And the energy that was contained in that emotion gets released into the energy body. Now your energy body is stronger.
I'll add another D, but I'm thinking of assimilation after dissolving, but delegating. Now you get to delegate how and where what you've taken in, how you can act in the world with that experience. I like that. That's awesome. It just, I mean, for me, my practice of sensory body really is in food. I'm a foodie and I really take my time. I've had people tell me, man, you really like to eat. And not because I eat a lot, but because I'm very mindful. And they look at me like, why are you eating like that?
I mean, it's just the most extraordinary experience to immerse in, like to really smell every single mouthful and then really taste it. And then really, like it's one of the best meditations you can do. Good.
But then people have different ways of doing it, surfing or whatever. Everyone's got their own way of getting into their body, getting into connection and that awareness that's all around us.
Yeah, for sure. Surfing's a good one. Making love is a good one, you know. Walking in nature, like just hanging out with the trees. And then being able to take that, like the thing you do that you love, that you can be fully 100% with, and then begin to expand out into the rest of your life. So the things that you don't really love, you start to learn how to be 100% with them as well. You see?
How you do one thing will eventually affect how you do another thing. And I can attest to that. Anyway, that was awesome, Karalia. That was great. Thanks for coming on. Is there any last words you'd like to share? Your online presence.
Delight to come on and chat. You know, you'll find me on Instagram and on YouTube, not so much on Facebook, but Instagram, YouTube and my website. And I have, like you said, a direct realization training coming up online March 20th that I run. I run them sort of a couple of times a year usually. And that's going to be very much around emotional literacy. So how to skillfully work with the mental and emotional and energetic realms. It's kind of like yoga of the mental, emotional, and energetic realms. So we do some pretty powerful yogic tantric practices that are amazing.
Cool.
Well,
you have an awesome rest of your day and catch up soon. Are you going to go to a Spirit Fest?
I will be at Spirit doing Dancing the Dragon. And then I'll be at Earthbeat as well.
Cool. All right. Maybe catch you there.
Awesome. Thank you, Jason.
Sweet. Be well. Take care. Thank you, Karalia, for coming on the show. It was a blessing for me to be in dialogue with you. I am really grateful for what we talked about, and you've helped me reframe my own personal experiences and Yeah, I guess I had my own little mini awakening during that conversation. You're a blessing for all of us. May you continue to be blessed yourself with grace. If you would like to learn more about Karalia's offerings, you can go to her website, karalia.com. You can find all her links there to her direct realization training, as well as her books and her mentoring and her podcasts. And yes, she will be at the upcoming festivals, NZ Spirit and Earthbeat. So, yep, and I'll also be at NZ Spirit presenting my holistic lifestyle principles to support your inner healer. So hopefully I will see you there. And if I don't, until next time, stay free, be yourself, know that you are loved, and that you are love. Kia kaha.